Welcome to Music from the Tower, highlighting the beauty of sacred and classical music. We come to you from the Tower of Hope on the magnificent campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. Now, here's your host, John Romeri.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Music from the Tower. This is John Romeri, your host, and today we are talking all about chant, not just Gregorian chant, all chant. And so we had to bring in some experts, and we have two today. We have Matthew Gray from the Mission Basilica, who is now probably the most famous guest here on Music from the Tower, because Matthew, this is your third show. Welcome back.
My third show. Thank you, John. Good to see you again.
It is wonderful to have you. Matthew, as you know, is not just the director of music at the Mission Basilica, but a well-known musician here in the Diocese of Orange and the assistant director of our diocesan choir, I'm proud to say. So it's wonderful to have Matthew back here on the show, usually talking about D'Angelo's voice vocal ensemble. But today, all things chant, and we have lots of music. But we also have another very special guest, David Koch. David, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Sean. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And wait till you hear this music we have for you. David and Matthew cooked up a beautiful CD called, pleasantly enough, Chant. Good title, boys.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. And it is gorgeous. So let's talk about chant. David, what is this chant? Where did it come from? Is all chant Gregorian chant? Just tell us a little bit about what chant is.
Chant is the primary music of the church, according to the teaching documents, especially reiterated at the Second Vatican Council. So that's saying a lot. It's been in the Western liturgical tradition since the very first centuries. So it's basically a single melodic line sung unaccompanied, normally to a scriptural text. So it's a musical way of enhancing the inspired word of God for the worshiper to bring him or her, the whole community actually, in the fundamental action of worshiping the Lord.
Let's unpack that just a little bit. You said that there was music and text, but is it primacy of text? Because the melodies are not exactly barn burners, and it's unaccompanied, so there's no organ underneath. There's no, well, there are on big feast days often, but so it's just a simple melodic line. And was this invented by Pope Gregory? How did we get the name Gregorian chant?
Well, it's more properly perhaps named plain chant. It's called more usually Gregorian because Pope St. Gregory the Great, who was Pope from 590 until 604, he loved the chant and he saw its value and was a promulgator of the chant and spread it throughout the Western Christendom at the time.
So when well, the sort of codification started.
Yes, right? Start and really began to reorganize the liturgical act itself.
Right.
But you mentioned, the other thing you mentioned was the text, the scriptural text. So these aren't just paraphrases like a hymn we might sing in church that just has some nice words or good feeling words or even sometimes me and Jesus words. But these are actual texts that are scriptural. And we're going to talk a lot more about the propers of the Mass today. But not all music was sung in chant-like form of the propers. Sometimes it was the ordinary of the Mass. In other words, the Kyrie or the Gloria or the Sanctus. Those two were sung in chant form, right?
Right. And those are probably the ones that people are most familiar with that are listening to the program, the Kyrie, the Agnus Dei, the Gloria.
Yes, we all know those chants.
Right.
And even though they're in Latin, we kind of know what those words mean. The Agnus Dei is
right.
The Lamb of God.
Right.
The Kyrie is the Greek text of Lord have mercy. And so often we might have a little melody in our heads to those. But the propers are a whole other thing.
Right.
They change every week. They change every feast. They change every day, really.
Yes.
And those proper texts have sort of been lost in the U.S., especially, and we're trying to reclaim those. We're going to talk more about that as we move through the chant. But there are some chants that people really do know still. And there are a couple of chants that we still retain, even in churches where they might say, no, we don't sing any chant. But yet, they might know a Nubi Caritas chant.
Right.
They might know the Pange Lingua on Holy Thursday. They might even not know it's a chant, but they might sing, even in English, those, that little melody, that dee-da-da-da-da.
Dum-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes, there we go.
Yeah.
You know, or Ubi Caritas et Amor. Or just the Adoro Te chant. Richard Prue even took melodies of chant, even O Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
Right.
And turned them into mass settings.
Which we use at the Basilica, right?
We use them here, too.
Emmanuel.
It's very clever to get those tunes in people's heads.
Right.
But your CD, called Chant, recorded at the Mission Basilica, is really a whole compilation of communion chants. These are communion antiphons right out of the Gradualia Romana. And now, of course, in the U.S., we can use the text from the Gradualia or we can use the text from the Missal. So just as cathedrals, a lot of our parish musicians were intrigued by the idea of coming back, the church added this whole other layer and made it so complicated nobody could figure out where any of these should come from or what the accompanying psalms might be. But it's real ritual music at its best, isn't it?
Definitely.
Yes, it's ritual insofar as even though the melodies are different, there's that sort of spiritual elevation, which is just part and parcel of true ritual. It just lifts up the worshipers to God. People, the highest compliment we get when we sing our chants is, oh, that was transcendent. So we know that we are helping people to pray and draw closer to God through the ritual act of the liturgical song when we do the chants. So that's very, very gratifying.
Yes, chant has almost, I mean, there was a time when chant, the monks of Spain and everybody,
they were on the
top charts, you know, because everybody, they didn't have any context of liturgy, but they did have this music that was chant that everybody just thought was cool to listen to, you know. But it really takes another place. And in the ritual action of its own nature, it's very flexible. You know, we face that in the liturgy today, that it doesn't really fit when you sing a hymn because Father's there. Now everybody's just waiting around and we're singing a hymn. Whereas in the Protestant church, they just stop everything and sing a hymn.
Right.
But in our liturgical actions, we don't really want to stop. You know, it feels wrong to make everybody stand around while we're singing a hymn. But yet in an antiphon, you can just stop after so many psalm verses. But what other kinds of chant are there besides Gregorian chant or plain chant?
When you were speaking, I was thinking the chant goes all the way back to the Jewish tradition in the temple.
Well, of course, I mean, the cantor tradition.
Cantor would have sung chant, and then it moved. I mean, there's Sarum chant, there's Mozarabic chant, there's Byzantine chant.
Ambrosian chant. So they all take an Anglican chant.
Anglican chant, yeah, of course.
Anglican has their own way of singing the Psalms and the Psalter.
Certainly.
And this is just in the Western Church. Then there's the whole Byzantine, Orthodox, Eastern Christian chant tradition, which has its own richness and melodic differences from our own Western tradition.
But yet they're all pretty much unaccompanied. They're all pretty much single line.
Yes. Yes.
You know, there aren't harmonies, there aren't choral, there aren't polyphony. Although we talked a little bit earlier about all the music that really did come based on chant. You know, a lot of pieces that we know became beautiful motets by Palestrina and by other composers
right.
who took the melody of the chant and turned it into a two-part or three-part or five-part
right.
Beautiful motet.
Either took the melody or perhaps maybe took the text and made something totally new.
Yeah, something
based
completely
on the same text, too. So either fashion.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about that as we go through today's program and about the ways chant is being revived. And is it indeed the music of the church, or is it just some lost piece, a museum piece that no one looks at anymore? So we will be right back, but we're going to listen to some chant first. Tell us what we're going to hear, David.
Well, to start with, we're going to hear the Jerusalem Surge. So this is the communion antiphon for the second Sunday of Advent. Those opening words are Jerusalem, arise, because your Savior is coming and all the joy that he is going to bring along. So it's a very lively second mode piece, and yet it has that lilting rhythm and just that.
Yes, there's just something very, we talked a little bit about how, before the show, how chant really, I mean, it could be Christmas Day or it could be deep into the fifth Sunday of Lent. And it still sort of sounds the same, you know. It's about the text. There might be some tone painting with leaps and things of the music,
or the mode, different mode.
Yeah, a different mode, a different key, but it basically has that wonderful. Just the text is primary. So, all right, here's music from the second Sunday of Advent, a little Gregorian chant from the album, from the Mission Basilica of San Juan Capistrano. And we will be right back with a whole lot more in our show, All About Chant. Stay tuned. This is Music from the Tower, and today we are all things chant. And we have our two experts here, Matthew Gray from the Mission Basilica and David Koch, the chant master of the Mission Basilica. And so we want to know how you two became chant experts. What led you, first of all, to your love of chant? And where did you go to study? Is there a chant school somewhere? Where does anybody out there in radio land figure out how to learn more about chant? Matt, where'd you
I was just thinking when you said that. I had my one day of instruction at Cal State Fullerton in Gregorian chant. That was it. And that
and
was
then they moved right
that
on.
Was all you got. That was it. And then it was the Renaissance following that. So it certainly didn't happen at school or college and even graduate school. I'm thinking it was just a blip and that was it. But
well, when you look at the scope of music history, the whole history of music, you know, they talk about Gregorian chant for one chapter in the Grout book.
Right. Yeah.
And then you're done.
And then you're done.
Now you got to move to the Renaissance, how chant evolved. But
I was lucky. I was at Holy Family Cathedral, and I got a card in my box from Catholic U. Mm-hmm. And my God, I looked at it and I went and talked to Monsignor and said, what do you think about this? And he says, go. And so I got to spend the summer at Catholic U working with Dr. Ted Maurier doing chant. And that's how I spent my summer. I was singing with Leo. He was
wonderful director of the Shrine.
Doing a CD that summer. So I got to sing on that. And I got to sing for all the liturgies there at the National Shrine. But Dr. Maurier kept us really busy.
Ted Maurier, for years, was the founder and the director of the choir school at, it was the diocesan choir school
St. Paul's.
Of Boston.
Yeah.
But it was not at the cathedral.
Mm-mm.
It was at St. Paul's in Cambridge.
Right.
And I think Dr. Maurier is single-handedly responsible. He helped create the Ward method
right.
that we use in
Justine Ward.
Children, which incorporated chant at the highest levels for these kids. But he also influenced so many people. Some of the people at that choir school were people like Charles Callahan,
right?
You know, who writes so many beautiful organ pieces on
yes,
chant.
On chant themes,
because
right.
Because they came up learning and knowing the chants.
Absolutely.
Leo Abbott from the Boston Cathedral.
Yep.
You know, they were all graduates of the choir school that Ted Maurier ran. Scott Tarkington,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's out teaching chant all over the place now. He was a student of Dr.
I think
Martin.
He was there when I was there. Actually.
Was he? Yeah.
This is the early 90s.
I'm telling you, we would not be chant rich as we are in the United States without our wonderful Dr. Ted Maurier.
And he was just a delight, but he was also just...
But he loved in and through, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, it came out of him all the time. We would spend the first 4 hours in the morning basically with instruction, and then we'd have lunch, and then we'd have a colloquium in the afternoon where we had to conduct chant for him one-on-one, where we had to sing chant for him one-on-one, where we had to transcribe chant for him one-on-one. So he told us affectionately when we started the class, you'll have no time to visit monuments. That's what he said.
Isn't that great?
So, and he was right. It was pretty rigorous. That got me started. And then working with David has really helped a lot, too. So you get that knowledge kind of planted into your mind, and then it kind of bears fruit after having a chance to actually
book
do it.
It's about performing it.
No, and having to sing them close to every week has really helped, too. Some of the nuances that I can do naturally with choral music is now starting to permeate the way I understand chant.
Yes, and our friend Paul Solomonovich always said, if you want your choir to be better, sing chant.
Indeed.
And he knew that. When you hear the LA Master Chorale, they are so fabulous, even to this day,
yes,
because Paul drilled them on chant.
Yes.
When you heard
that's
that,
how he grew up.
200
he grew up with
voice,
chant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of thing we must pass on to our children.
Yes.
You and I know that so well.
Absolutely.
Well, David, where did you jump into the chant world here?
Well, I got started in church music when I was in junior high school, singing in then the folk group. Then when I moved on to Matt Lass.
Were you singing chant in the folk group?
No.
No. And my father was very musical. He had a baby grand piano and
had
his wonderful pieces he played. Then what really got me pointed in that direction was my undergraduate days at Thomas Aquinas College up in Santa Paula,
okay.
where they have a really rich liturgical musical tradition, and they had chant was sung every Sunday there, and the practices were very early in the morning. So I didn't start singing chant that way, but I did enjoy listening to it. Following college, I decided to spend some time in a monastery, and that's where I really got my chant training. I spent 15 years at St. Benedict Abbey in Massachusetts, and there our choir master, Brother Alphonsus Maria, and the whole community actually was trained by Father André Saint-Cyr from Saint-Benoît-du-Lac in Canada, which is a Salem monastery.
Yes, exactly.
So they have that rich Salem training.
Salem in France is the traditional place when people say, I went to study chant, or, you know, you either go to Salem in France, which I was privileged enough to go to several times.
Yes.
And look over the chant books, look at the codices, and other places, like the place in Canada, there's another one in Amsterdam, that are sort of little offshoots of that monastery, but they still keep up that chant tradition of carrying on the just organizing every day the monks their work on just transcribing the chants, looking at the different squiggles to see if they've got the right note values. But that sounds fabulous. And did you sing the hours throughout the day?
We did
and mass, daily mass too.
Yes, so we're talking about these propers. Well, at the Basilica, we do one communion piece on Sundays. for our Latin chant. At the monastery, we did the five propers, as well as the four or five pieces of the ordinary. So there's 10 chants just at Mass.
This is one day still.
Yes.
That's one Mass, one hour.
And then there are all the other liturgical hours, Lauds, Sext, Vespers, Compline, and then other little hours. And then, of course, Matins, the long early morning hour. So from one monastery to another, the monks spend anywhere from, say, 2 to 4 or more hours a day chanting.
No wonder you're the chant master.
Indeed.
Because you really lived it. It was part of your daily life. And, you know, we might know those words now as morning prayer and midday prayer and evening prayer, night prayer. But in a monastery, they're 9 times a day when you actually take time out of your day. The bells ring and everyone goes to chapel. And you, the way to get through those psalms and pieces of music was to chant.
Yes. And I mentioned that I did spend time at these two monasteries, the one in Massachusetts, and then I actually spent 2.5 years at the newer monastic refoundation at Norcia, the birthplace of St. Benedict.
Wow, what a wonderful wealth of experience.
Yes, yes. And so there we carried on the Latin chant. We did all the hours in Latin, trying to follow closely the rule as Saint Benedict wrote it down. He was just a generation ahead of St. Gregory, who we mentioned. So it's been carried on these 1,500 years, and it the richness is there. I mean, I treasured my books that had been held by who knows how many monks or nuns. Some of the as the books got passed along from one community or another.
You don't just run to the music store and grab one.
That's right.
And they're precious, these books, too.
Yeah. I mean, even musicians now, you know, you see a copy of the Liber Usurales.
The
book that every choir member had in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
That's all you had. Maybe a St. Gregory hymnal here and a Pius X hymnal there. But every choir member had their Liber.
Now they're on eBay and Amazon.
Now they're on eBay for a fortune.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's hear a little more music. What should we listen to now? This is also from the album Chant, recorded at the Mission Basilica. We heard the one from Advent. Now what are you going to treat us with?
Well, now we are going to jump all the way to Holy Week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Pater si non potest. These are the words of Jesus as he was suffering in the agony of the garden. Father, if this chalice may not pass away, but I must drink it, thy will be done.
Palm Sunday.
Sunday communion antiphon.
Yes.
All right. Well, here it is. This is from the music chant. You are listening to Music from the Tower, and this is John Romero and our two chant experts, David Koch and Matthew Gray, and we will be right back with a lot more beautiful music and a lot more about chant, especially in today's church. Stay tuned. This is Music from the Tower, and today we are All Things Chant. And we have our two experts here, Matthew Gray from the Mission Basilica and David Koch, the chant master of the Mission Basilica. And so we want to know how you two became chant experts. What led you, first of all, to your love of chant? And where did you go to study? Is there a chant school somewhere? Where does anybody out there in radio land figure out how to learn more about chant? Matt, where'd you
I was just thinking when you said that. I had my one day of instruction at Cal State Fullerton in Gregorian chant. That was it. And that
and
was
then they moved right
that
on.
Was all you got. That was it. And then it was the Renaissance following that. So it certainly didn't happen at school or college and even graduate school. I'm thinking it was just a blip and that was it. But
well, when you look at the scope of music history, the whole history of music, you know, they talk about Gregorian chant for one chapter in the Grout book.
Right. Yeah.
And then you're done.
And then you're done.
Now you got to move to the Renaissance, how chant evolved. But
I was lucky. I was at Holy Family Cathedral, and I got a card in my box from Catholic U. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it, and I went and talked to Monsignor and said, "What do you think about this?" And he says, "Go." And so I got to spend the summer at Catholic U working with Dr. Ted Maurier doing chant. And that's how I spent my summer. I was singing with Leo. He was doing a CD.
Wonderful director of the Shrine.
Doing a CD that summer. So I got to sing on that. And I got to sing for all the liturgies are there at the National Shrine. But Dr. Maurier kept us really busy.
Ted Maurier, for years, was the founder and the director of the choir school at, it was the diocesan choir school
St. Paul's.
In Boston.
Yeah.
But it was not at the cathedral. Mm-mm. It was at St. Paul's in Cambridge.
Right.
And I think Dr. Maurier is single-handedly responsible. He helped create the ward method
right. That
we use in
Justine Ward.
Children, which incorporated chant at the highest levels for these kids. But he also influenced so many people. Some of the people at that choir school were people like Charles Callahan.
Right.
You know, who writes so many beautiful organ pieces on chant.
On chant themes,
because
right.
Because they came up learning and knowing the chants.
Absolutely.
Leo Abbott from the Boston Cathedral.
Yep.
You know, they were all graduates of the choir school that Ted Maurier ran. Scott Tarkington,
mm-hmm.
you know, who's out teaching chant all over the place now. He was a student of Dr.
I think
Maurier.
He was there when I was there, actually.
Was he?
This is the early 90s.
I'm telling you, we would not be chant rich as we are in the United States without our wonderful Dr. Ted Maurier.
And he was just a delight, but he was also just...
But he loved in and through, didn't he?
Yeah, he just came out of him all the time. We would spend the first 4 hours in the morning basically with instruction, and then we'd have lunch, and then we'd have a colloquium in the afternoon where we had to conduct chant for him one-on-one, where we had to sing chant for him one-on-one, where we had to transcribe chant for him one-on-one. So he told us affectionately when we started the class, "You'll have no time to visit monuments," is what he said.
Isn't that great?
So, and he was right. It was pretty rigorous. That got me started. And then working with David has really helped a lot, too. So you get that knowledge kind of planted into your mind, and then it's kind of bears fruit after having a chance to actually
book
do it.
It's about performing it.
No, and having to sing them close to every week has really helped, too. Some of the nuances that I can do naturally with choral music is now starting to permeate the way I understand chant.
Yes, and our friend Paul Solomonovich always said, if you want your choir to be better, sing chant.
Indeed.
And he knew that. When you hear the LA Master Chorale, they are so fabulous, even to this day.
Yes.
Because Paul drilled them on chant.
Yes.
When you heard
that's
that,
how he grew up.
200
he grew up with
voice,
chant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of thing we must pass on to our children.
Yes.
You and I know that so well.
Absolutely.
Well, David, where did you jump into the chant world here?
Well, I got started in church music when I was in junior high school, singing in then the folk group. Then when I moved on to Matt Laughs.
Were you singing chant in the folk group?
No.
No. And my father was very musical. He had a baby grand piano. And
wonderful
pieces he played. Then what really got me pointed in that direction was my undergraduate days at Thomas Aquinas College up in Santa Paula, where they have a really rich liturgical musical tradition, and they had chant was sung every Sunday there. And the practices were very early in the morning, so I didn't start singing chant that night, but I did enjoy listening to it. Following college, I decided to spend some time in a monastery, and that's where I really got my chant training. I spent 15 years at St. Benedict Abbey in Massachusetts, and there our choir master, Brother Alphonsus Maria, and the whole community actually was trained by Father André Saint-Cyr from Saint-Benoît-du-Lac in Canada, which is a Salem monastery.
Yes, exactly.
So they have that rich Salem training.
Salem in France is the traditional place when people say, I went to study chant, or, you know, you either go to Salem in France, which I was privileged enough to go to several times.
Yes.
And look over the chant books, look at the codices, and other places, like the place in Canada, there's another one in Amsterdam, that are sort of little offshoots of that monastery, but they still keep up that chant tradition of carrying on just organizing every day the monks, their work on just transcribing the chants, looking at the different squiggles to see if they've got the right note values. But that sounds fabulous. And did you sing the hours, throughout the day?
We did.
And Mass, daily Mass, too.
We're talking about these propers. Well, at the Basilica, we do one communion piece on Sundays for our Latin chant. At the monastery, we did the five propers, as well as the four or five pieces of the ordinary. So there's 10 chants just at Mass.
This is one day still.
Yes.
That's one Mass, one hour.
And then there are all the other liturgical hours, Lauds, Sext, Vespers, Compline, and then other little hours. And then, of course, Matins, the long early morning hour. So from one monastery to another, the monks spend anywhere from, say, 2 to 4 or more hours a day chanting.
No wonder you're the chant master.
Indeed.
Because you really lived it. It was part of your daily life. And we might know those words now as morning prayer and midday prayer and evening prayer, night prayer. But in a monastery, they're 9 times a day when you actually take time out of your day. The bells ring and everyone goes to chapel. And the way to get through those psalms and pieces of music was to chant.
Yes. And I mentioned that I did spend time at these two monasteries, the one in Massachusetts, and then I actually spent 2.5 years at the newer monastic refoundation at Norcia, the birthplace of St. Benedict.
Wow, what a wonderful wealth of experience.
Yes. And so there we carried on the Latin chant. We did all the hours in Latin, trying to follow closely the rule as Saint Benedict wrote it down. He was just a generation ahead of St. Gregory, who we mentioned. So it's been carried on these 1,500 years, and the richness is there. I mean, I treasured my books that had been held by who knows how many monks or nuns, as the books got passed along from one community or another.
You don't just run to the music store and grab one.
That's right.
And they're precious, these books, too.
Yeah. I mean, even musicians now, you see a copy of the Liber Usuralis.
The book
that every choir member had in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
That's all you had. Maybe a St. Gregory hymnal here and a Pius X hymnal there. But every choir member had their Liber.
Now they're on eBay and Amazon.
Now they're on eBay for a fortune.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's hear a little more music. What should we listen to now? This is also from the album Chant, recorded at the Mission Basilica. We heard the one from Advent. Now what are you going to treat us with?
Well, now we are going to jump all the way to Holy Week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Pater si non potest. These are the words of Jesus as he was suffering in the agony of the garden. Father, if this chalice may not pass away, but I must drink it, thy will be done.
Palm Sunday.
Palm Sunday.
The Palm Sunday communion antiphon.
Yes.
All right. Well, here it is. This is from the Music Chant. You are listening to Music from the Tower, and this is John Romero and our two chant experts, David Koch and Matthew Gray, and we will be right back with a lot more beautiful music and a lot more about chant, especially in today's church. Stay tuned.
Spiritus Sanctus.
Welcome back to Music from the Tower. We've just been enjoying another Gregorian chant from this beautiful chant album by our men of the Mission Basilica. I almost said Cathedral Basilica. I've served in too many cathedrals, perhaps. But this was the chant. David, tell us about it. This was the chant for
Pentecost.
Pentecost. We just celebrated a few weeks ago.
Yes. It's a glorious seventh mode piece, which has a lot of movement in it. A lot of big fourths and fifths, so nice intervals, which just bring out the joy and the force, the spiritual force, you could say, for Pentecost. It's because the text is taken from the account of the descent of the Holy Ghost at Pentecost.
So those fourths and fifths are the jumping of the flames.
Acts of the Apostles, yeah.
Suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a mighty wind coming whence they were sitting, and they were all filled with the Holy Ghost, and they began to speak the wonderful works of God. Factus est.
Now, you've mentioned mode a couple of times. Let's talk about that for a second. How many modes are there? Just like, 5G phones, 4G phones. How many Gs are there? How many modes are there?
Seven modes.
Eight modes, yes.
Ionian, Dorian, Phrygian, Lydian, Mixolydian, Aeolian.
Matt, you're really showing off.
And yes. Locrian. Seven modes. But we have eight church modes.
Eight church modes, right. Yes. I count according to the church.
This is a church program, right?
So, yes. Keep him churchy, would you?
So, again, I'm the academic. So, yes. Eight church modes, yes.
And what the different modes do, they give you really different scales. So, for example, the first mode, it begins not on do, we think going ray. From do to do in a major scale. It begins on re and goes from
D to D.
D to D, if you're...
Dorian mode, basically.
Right.
Dorian mode.
And if you played it on the piano, you would just play it straight up with no black keys.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yes, it sounds a little odd to our ear.
Yeah.
But each one was based on a different mode, but why? Why couldn't we just sing them all in the key of D?
Based on the text, based on the season. Based on the celebration.
They give a different musical language, really. Just as when I discover a new contemporary composer, it's almost like I'm learning a new language. It's a new way to express human experience and express beauty. And I think there's something of that in the various church modes of music.
Well, I think we know that just in a hymn or even a choral anthem. Sometimes we hear it in D major and then We try it again in D flat, and it just sort of nestles in because
right.
It has a warmer quality.
Think of Brahms being in flat keys, D flat, that little autumnal sound. That comes from the doctrine of affection. So
yes,
different modes elicit a different response.
Right. Yeah, it does. And so that's why we had these eight church modes, and different feasts would take on a different mode, right?
Well, they go all the way back to Copernicus, I think, the whole idea of modes, don't they? The history of modes with the Greeks. I'm pretty sure. I'm checking my book right now to make sure.
Mac is our academic.
I'm certain they are, because there's like Phrygian mode is the mode of war. I remember that as being one of the attributes for that mode. That's that half step relationship right at the beginning. So
everyone has a little different character. So it's nice to know that these are not just really the same. They may all sound to an average listener or pew potato out there. It might just sound like another little piece of chant, but there really are some great differences. And there's often tone painting, right?
Right.
That, like,
and mixed mode, where we'll have more than one mode in one chant, which happens often too.
Which is a treat we've got coming in our
finals. Stay tuned.
And that's a real challenge when it's mixed mode. So that even kind of heightens the emotional content even more, though, I think. It's kind of busting out of its original mode and stealing from another mode to kind of add more impact of drama.
And then return to the original mode?
Yeah, because you'd cycle back to the beginning of the chant, so after the verses.
And part of what distinguishes the church modes, too, is they end on the same final. So there's this, we mentioned re in the second mode.
Yeah.
Every piece that's in the first and second mode is going to end on on that re.
Which is like modern music, diatonic music, where we end on tonic, right? Right, end on do, or end on home plate.
Well, we've talked a lot of highfalutin words here about music and all these things, but does this chant, is somebody writing chant now? Is there any future to this? And should parishes be really investigating this? Should parish musicians, should congregations be saying, I want to sing more chant?
Absolutely. That's my vote. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we're doing it at the Basilica. I just feel it's so important. And I think any church can do it. I mean, I have a music background, but not a background in chant, and I'm doing it now. And so, I mean, I think anybody that is
a
church musician.
But we all don't have a David
Koch at our parish. No, some of us are more fortunate. No, but you know, you could get out to the Norbertines and go visit the Norbertines, and they would certainly take you under their wings.
Just a few months ago, you walked into Segerstam Center, and the Norbertines were chanting, preparing us to be at St. Florian Abbey for a Bruckner concert.
Yeah.
You know, and I know Carl's going to do a lot more of that kind of stuff.
And they would welcome you with open arms. Every time I've gone there, I've felt totally at home. They're so embracing and so kind. And they would sit down for a quick tutorial, I'm sure. Or come and sing at the Basilica or sing at the cathedral.
Right.
I mean,
we are doing it. And as are many cathedrals around the country, there has been this return to saying, this is who we are, that Catholic DNA. I love that analogy.
Yeah.
And really being able to just embrace this as who we are and how well it fits into the liturgy. Well, having both of you here has been such a treat. And to be able to hear this music that you've actually recorded. Often we have music that other people bring in that's from all over the place. This is from right down the road, my
friend. Right from the Basilica.
CD, we'll certainly have a link on our website. And of course, as always, all the music will be at ChristCathedralMusic.org. You'll be able to listen to these tracks in their entirety, just in case they fade out on the radio. But they'll be all there, and you can get this very CD for yourself at the Mission Basilica
website. Yes, just right from our website.
And we will have a link on our website so that people can go find it and purchase it for their very own. But usually at the end of these programs, I encourage people to go out and listen to live performance of great music. Well, today we're going to send you to the Mission Basilica. We're going to send you to the Cathedral Basilica. We're going to send you to the Norbertines.
Sure.
Maybe we'll even treat you to a trip to Solem to hear the monks, the real birth of chant or the rebirth. Birthplace of chant. But thank you both for coming in and sharing this insight into Gregorian chant, so the music of our church.
It's always fun to be here, John.
It's great to have you on the show, Matthew, again. We'll have to keep you in more and more so that you keep your record high. It's like the guest host of Saturday Night Live. You know?
The guest host.
Yeah,
I like that.
Exactly.
Yeah, or the person that sits next to Johnny Carson.
I know.
The Ed McMahon. I'm the Ed McMahon.
And now the chant guru, along with our David Koch. And for our very last piece of music, David, tell us what it's going to be.
This is another eighth mode piece. It's the Comedite Pingria. It's a beautiful piece from Ordinary Time. And in fact, I wanted our listeners to hear this because when our choir visited and sang here for you,
when I very first arrived.
Yeah, first arrival, this is the chant we sang. And it's a beautiful chant. Go eat rich food and drink sweet wine and send portions to those who have not, because it is the holy day of the Lord. And be not sad, for the joy of the Lord is our strength.
Every one of these communion antiphons is it's almost like a synopsis of the gospel. And when do we do it? On our road to communion. You know, it's that beautiful reiterating of the gospel. How many times we would sing, take our bread, and all these crazy things.
Beautiful poetic text.
This is the words of the church in our communion antiphons, which we have recaptured. Well, thank you so much for that, and enjoy this last little bit of chant as we sign off today for Music of the Tower. David, thank you for being in with us today.
Thank you so much for having
us. And we will see you next time on Music from the Tower, and in the meantime, get out there and hear some Gregorian chant. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for next week.
Et Amen.